Adventist World Radio. From broadcast to baptism. Powered by SID Media.
Hi, good afternoon, Mxolisi.
Good afternoon, my leader, and good afternoon to the listeners of AWR.
Hey, how you doing, man?
We can't complain, thank you, and compliments on the new year to you.
Compliments. In fact, we met this year, actually, already.
Oh, did
so,
we?
Yeah, we did, We met, I think about 2 weeks ago or so. Yeah, must be. And it was at Sentin, so it was a lovely, lovely meeting there. Early in the year, I think it was the very first Saturday of this year, the Sabbath. Yeah. Now, let's go for it. You know, leadership actually isn't just about achieving results, as we all know. It's about also taking care of the team's well-being. Now, making sure that one's current and future leaders understand the importance of physical and mental well-being in the workplace and also can communicate to their team is actually a core skill. Now, I was saying earlier to the listeners that sometimes when people leave companies, they're not necessarily leaving the company. They're leaving their manager. Mm-hmm. They're leaving their boss. They're leaving their immediate report because they are tired of maybe their leadership style is toxic, etc. And so they end up leaving the company when in actual fact, they're leaving the boss. And given a chance, they'll probably move to another department. But hey, this what happens in this life. Now, Mxo, what steps can leaders take to promote a healthy work-life balance for their employees?
Thank you very much for the question, Zama. You said it very well that leaders or leadership is not about being in charge. It is about taking care of those who you are in charge or who are in your charge. So the steps that you need to take, of course, to make sure that you have a good or healthy working environment, you need to understand those whom you're leading. It is your responsibility to understand your people. I often make the joke or the jest to say, each person has approximately 16 variations of their characters. So you need to know your cholerics, your sanguines, your phlegmatics, et cetera, et cetera. So you need to understand those whom you're leading, first of all. And when you understand those whom you're leading, then the next step is then to say, to ascertain what works. Now, for example, you cannot put somebody who is a phlegmatic in a position where they are to interact with people. So you need to be able to say, where do we place so-and-so in this characteristic or this kind of temperament? So that's, as you understand your leadership, your people, you need to also understand where you need to put them or place them, and then make sure you are not putting them in harm's way.
That's
part of the responsibilities that an employer has to have or has to consider when they have their people. So for me, those are the three short steps I would take if I was to make sure that the environment for the wellness of my employees is paramount.
You know, what comes out actually on what you are saying, thank you for that response, is that I see the importance of, you know, going through those psychometrics because therein you are able to ascertain what type of a character this person is and if they're actually a fit for a particular position, eh?
That's correct. Of course, that's why I often say also to those whom I interact with, your interview starts from the moment you respond to an advert. When you respond to an advert, the tone that you use to write your email or send in your application would then determine the kind of person that you are. And then, of course, followed by the interview, the physical interview, or the Zoom interview. Nowadays, we have Zoom interviews. So the Zoom interview will then look at your behavior, your demeanor, et cetera, et cetera. So you need to understand the person that you're going to be interviewing or the person who's going to be put in that position so that they are not put in a place where it would harm them mentally or physically.
Yeah, because a large number of people actually would be very irritated with these psychometrics because they're thinking, Norman, what does it have to do with my job? And I'm glad that you actually mentioned that very important because you got to be placed properly because already the manager knows the type of people that you're going to be working with. You are coming into this environment. He knows the staff members that are in there. And so they just got to make sure that you are the right fit so that you don't, in your first week, and you already feel that you're in a toxic environment. Now, how can leaders then create a workplace that prioritizes their mental health?
Very good question. So our leaders, of course, need to understand that the priority is not the bottom line, of course, of the profit of the organization or whatever. The employees are the biggest asset that every business has. So it's not necessarily the money in the bank, it's the employees, because we are not in a generation that depends upon machines. So you need to make sure the following key responsibilities are created in your working environment. You need to provide a safe physical working condition, of course, including ergonomic workspaces, like, for example, a place where if someone needs to sit down, it does not impact on their back or their body or whatever the case may be. They're able to do their work properly. And then of course, secondly, make sure that the workloads or the expectations that you have on the employee are clear and are reasonable, because you can't give someone a responsibility that is beyond their capabilities or that is not in their expectations. You can't expect me as an accountant to be somebody who is now answering telephones. I'm supposed to be dealing with numbers. Yep, don't put me in a place where I must answer telephones. So it's a silly example. Then of course, create policies that protect the employee against discrimination or harassment or anything that will make them uncomfortable in doing their job. And then following that, of course, there's also the benefits that the employee must get, such as time off, time to rest, time to have their lunch. All of these things are part and parcel of making sure that an organization has a good working or healthy working environment. Now, of course, also, the responsibility also is upon the individual. Now, I know a lot of us would have saying, but the employer must do this. The employee also has a responsibility to take, to say they need to set their own personal boundaries, of course, and they must know that they can only be done this far, or they can only do these things this far, or they can engage with so-and-so that far. They cannot then expect the employer to know that if the employee has not said that. Of course, that is the engagement that must happen between the two.
Yeah.
And then secondly, with that, the responsibility of the employee is to make sure that they manage their time effectively. If you are told that the work in this organization starts at 8 o'clock, you can't rock up there at 8:01. You are late for work. So you need to manage your time effectively to be there on time. You can't say, no, my dog ate my watch, or that happened and that was, or traffic, or whatever the case may be. You are the one who is supposed to be doing the work. So you need to make sure that you arrive on time. And also during the breaks, the breaks are your responsibility to take. You don't expect the employer to come and say, hey, it's time for you to take a break now. Or, hey, it's time for lunch now. Those are your responsibilities, because you have been given work to do, and you must do it according to the time in a day, in a week, in a month, in a year, whatever the case may be.
You know, Mkolisi, thank you so much for that. So, I'm just trying to think, as you are, you know, talking and you're mentioning that employees also have got the responsibility of setting their own boundaries. I'm thinking in some people who are still thinking, no man, if I set boundaries here, they're just going to fire me because, you know, I'm going to be looking like a person who does not want to work. So they basically then end up taking anything. And I have a very practical example of a person who's continually working without breaks every day. There's no, hardly ever a leave, because they are now scared to say, should I say, guys, I'm tired. I just need 2 days off. Not a leave, just 2 days off. They're just scared that, well, if you don't want to work, you can go work elsewhere. How do the employees then navigate this setting of boundaries? Because there's also the reality that they don't want to lose their jobs.
For sure, for sure. Now, again, as I think I said in the beginning, that, you know, of course, this is a very complex issue that touches on business ethics and all of that. Now, ethically, every employee has rights. Every employer also has rights. Now, of course, in our respective governance across our territory, we know that there are different things, but the common trend is that we need to be treated as human beings. We are not machines. And as we're not machines,
yeah,
we also have that aspect to say, when I am being unfairly treated, I should have recourse to say, this is unfair on me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I am now taking the steps that I need to take, because as a human being, or first of all, secondly, as an employee of this organization, I cannot be unfairly treated. Now, of course, that recourse is available to every employee without fear of victimization. Should there be fear of victimization or losing your job, then that is an unhealthy working environment immediately there. That person should actually seek recourse with, of course, their employer, if necessary, with the relevant government authorities. If it needs to go to court, let it go to court. But every employee, like I can give you the in South African context and Southern African context, actually, where it is saying, for every 2 hours of work, you should actually rest for approximately 15 minutes. So in an eight-hour day, think about it. Your first break, if you start work at 8 o'clock and you finish at 4 o'clock, your first break is at 10:30. That's legally how it is done. Then your next break is at 1 o'clock or 12 o'clock, depending on your shift or whatever, or how you work. Then the next break after that one there would be at 3 o'clock or 3:30. And then the last one is at 4:30 when you leave, or 4 o'clock when you leave. So for the purposes of a human being, you are expected to work at least 2 hours, have a short break, and then continue. If there is no break, then that is tantamount to an unfair and unhealthy, or even, as you said, a toxic environment of work for a person.
Yeah, and I can almost hear someone saying, "Ooh, if it was my job," because there are other people who, when they get to work, the only time they take a break is 1 o'clock during lunch, and after lunch, they've got to go back to work. So these short breaks are just unheard of, and I've actually heard many people saying that. In fact, others, they work on the go, so you eat on the go, you do everything on the go. There's no time to say, okay, this is my lunch time. Time now, this 1 hour, I'm now enjoying lunch, etc., etc. So it does seem that perhaps many organizations may not actually be taking the employee wellness seriously.
Yes, yes. Look, Zama, you said it very well. Also, I mean, some employers don't take it very seriously, but they don't realize that they're burning the candle on both ends.
Yes.
If you were to be awake for 36 hours, what would happen at the end of the day? The health people will tell you that you exhibit symptoms of someone who is inebriated or drunk, because your body can't take the punishment of you working nonstop. So you've actually got to stop. And I mean, if I could extend this even to the point of people taking annual leave or taking a short break for them to recover after a long trip, or a simple thing as a hectic schedule. It is paramount or imperative that for the well-being as well as the longevity of the life of the employee, that rest must be included, or healthy breaks must be included in their working day or working life.
Now, tell me, in what ways can leaders help employees cope with stress and burnout?
Okay, very good question. The employer can, of course, the first one, or the easiest one, is that they be allowed to take leave or extended breaks. For example, I know in some organizations they have what you call extra leave or burnout leave, where you, after a certain amount of years of service, you are given an extra, a full calendar month of leave, whereby it is pay, it is a full paid month of leave where you can go and do whatever you like in addition to your normal leave of the year.
Mm.
So such things are good ways of starting to say, encouraging your employees to take leave,
yeah,
encouraging them to take breaks. Studies have shown that when you actually take a leave, you are supposed to take at least 10 days.
Mm.
10 days where you actually detach from your work,
yeah,
and actually rest. Because we know, you and I know, that in the 10 days, first of all, you must fix the light bulb in the house, you are doing gardening, you are fixing walls, you are not actually resting. But after 10 days of actually being away from work or disconnected from work,
mm,
you actually start to rest. So that is a first point, or the easiest point for them to assist the employees. Secondly, they could have employee assistance programs whereby they would take employees on refreshers.
Mm.
So sometimes in some companies, in one that I worked in before, they would say the employees from this department will be going on a short course. The short course is going to be held in Kitwe or in Pretoria or wherever,
mm-hmm,
where for that 1 week they are going to be doing their team build exercises or doing their what exercises, and at the same time being trained on something. So they can amalgamate their training as well as some resting periods or short periods.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, what the employer can also do is to encourage that the employees have rotational work schedules. For example, if there is a responsibility that is upon every employee, they could say, okay, this week you can start from 9 o'clock till 5 o'clock. Next week you're going to be working from 8 o'clock until 4 o'clock, for example. That then changes, or it shows that the employer is able to ascertain how the employee's pressures or stresses can be reduced. This has a benefit of reducing absenteeism and increasing productivity and creativity amongst the employees. And then you would have more engaged employees at the workplace.
Yeah, very, very important, and very, very actually great, great advice there. Now, tell me, is the employee's mental health their own responsibility or that of the organization?
The mental health, and I mean, this has been a growing area where employers and employees have been called to task in recent times.
Yes, yes.
The mental health is one of those aspects where it is a collaborative approach.
Okay.
What I mean by that, I mean it is both the employer as well as the employee's responsibility. The employer should not put the employee in a place where their mental health would be challenged or would be compromised. And then also vice versa, the employee should not allow themselves to be exposed to such. Now, before I get into more detail there,
yeah,
that one has got its own questions.
Yes.
You mentioned it earlier that in some places where you might even want to leave a department because your boss is treating you in the worst way possible. The culture of the employer needs to be one that has respect and one that is ethically bound with integrity. Now, we need to then remember that we are in a place where we are to act professionally,
mm,
and to act in a manner which then does not harm the other person or the next person next to you. Now, what I mean by this? I mean that the as an employee, when you go to work, you are to conduct yourself, your decorum must be such that it is above reproach.
Mm.
It is above question,
yeah,
and of course morally and ethically correct.
Mm-hmm.
Then of course the employer must not allow you to be in harm's way, meaning that they must also make sure that if ever something happens to you, in for example some form of harassment,
mm,
that you can be what, protected,
yeah,
should that happen, because it would harm your mental health.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm,
in that aspect, as I said, it is a collaborative approach where the employer should not put allow harm to come to you when you come to work, and when you are at work, don't cause harm to others.
Yes, yes, very, very important. Lastly, before I let you leave, Mr. Ncube, how can leaders ensure that employees feel valued and supported in their personal and professional lives? And I've heard many employees complaining about this.
Yeah, now that is an aspect which we would call employee recognition. Some would even say recognition and awards. You need to, again, as I said earlier, you need to understand your employees that when they leave their homes, they're going to a place where they are sharing their skills with the employer in exchange for remuneration and benefits and support and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when they do things the right way, you need to recognize that. Now, if you don't recognize that, then the employee is unaware whether he or she is doing it the right way.
Yeah, yeah.
So to answer the question directly, it rests in recognition and awarding the employee for doing the right thing. We as employers, a lot of times, focus on when the employee has done something wrong. Mm-hmm, oh my goodness! When you do something wrong, we are on you like a ton of bricks.
Like a ton of bricks.
But when you do the right thing, we forget. We're like, you are supposed to do it anyway. However, you could even set standards to say, if you meet your targeted expectations, it is okay. However, if you supersede your target expectations, we need to then applaud you. Give a silly example. Simple example: when somebody has reached 10 years of uninterrupted service for you as an employer, you simply recognize and say, "Hey, so and so, thank you very much for your unwavering work that you have done for this company or this organization, and we would reward you with a day off." I know some employers say, on your birthday, you work the half day. You come in the morning, and at 12 o'clock, you go home and enjoy your birthday. So simple things like recognition of what good things the employee has done, or even in things that refer to their personal life, and that then employees realize, okay, I am adding value. Because at the end of the day, if they're not adding value, you can't reward them. You would rather reward someone who is adding value. So when they've added value and they're doing it the right way, you need to reward them. You need to recognize that. And that would be my suggestion. Recognition and reward goes a long way. And I know even where I am working, we did something for our employees last year to simply recognize them and say, well done. We had an employee of, not employee of the year as such, but I mean, a round table to say, a survey to say, ladies and gentlemen, would you like to nominate someone who has done well in your organization?
Mm-hmm.
If so, who is it? Nominate them, and then we give them a reward for that. Then it then brings it, it's not just only the employer thing, you could then involve the employees as part of that process.
Beautiful stuff, Mxolisi Ncube, joining us there as our guest, talking about employee wellness. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Always a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much, Malina.
Thank you.
Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.